She played one of the most iconic roles in cinema history. Just ahead, Mary Badham on the legacy of Harper Lee, To Kill a Mockingbird, and more. Good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Subscribe to the Daily Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, and watch the show now, video on demand every day at tvjax.com. Well, just ahead, the actress who portrayed Scout in the classic To Kill a Mockingbird, Mary Badham, joins the show and takes your calls. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Also this morning, the CEO of the Jacksonville Symphony with a look at their new season, plus music legend Herb Alpert, and a look at weekend events from The Spectator. All of that and more coming up this morning. But first this hour, at the age of 10, she played the iconic role of Scout in the classic 1962 film To Kill a Mockingbird, that movie based, of course, on the beloved novel by the late Harper Lee. For her portrayal of Scout, young actress Mary Badham was nominated for a Best Supporting Actress Academy Award. At the time, she was the youngest Oscar nominee ever. Mary Badham is making a couple of appearances in our area this weekend to talk about the legacy of Mockingbird, her memories of Harper Lee and Gregory Peck, and more. We're so pleased to have a preview for our listeners as we welcome Mary Badham to the program, and she's on the line now. Mary Badham, a pleasure to speak with you. Good morning.
Good morning.
And what are your questions for Mary Badham, who portrayed the iconic role of Scout in the 1962 classic To Kill a Mockingbird? We welcome your calls right now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. You can also weigh in on our Facebook page, and you'll be making a couple of appearances. More about that in a moment, Mary Badham. But first, let me ask you, how did it come about that you landed this incredible role of Scout in that 1962 film? How did you end up getting the part?
Well, my mom had been an actress. She was with our local town and gown theater, and she did some work with one of the universities. The head of her theater, James Hatcher, had told the cast and crew that he had that, you know, the film people were coming to Birmingham to look for these two children, and suggested to my mother that she bring me in. I'd never done anything before, but he knew that I was about the right age and everything, and I'm sure he'd seen me around the theater, and suggested I go in, and my mother had to go and get permission from my father, who said no, and my mom had my dad totally wrapped, and she said, "Now, Henry, dear, what are the chances the child will get the part anyway?" So she brought me in, and lo and behold, I got the part. So
wow,
the rest is history.
Sure. And you became part of history, of course. This movie considered so central to our American story, along with the novel. You spoke out recently with the sad passing of Harper Lee. What are your memories of her? She was on the set for part of the production, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was there, but I didn't really remember anything about her and our meetings. She was there. The only way that I knew anything was that there were photographs of us together. So what she said to me, what I said to her, I don't really remember. But it wasn't till later on, as a matter of fact, just a few years ago, that we reconnected. And she was just lovely. We became very close, and she had such a great sense of humor, which you can see in her writings. She was very sharp, and I just hope that that I can be that sharp at her age. And Miss Alice, who was so wonderful, also her sister. The first time I saw Miss Alice was in her law office at like 99, I think she was at that point. And she was working on someone's taxes for them. So, I mean, they were very bright right up to the end, and I loved them both very much.
And we'll go to your calls in just a moment as we speak right now with Mary Badham. She portrayed the classic role of Scout in the 1962 film To Kill a Mockingbird. It's 549-2937 to join us. Mary Badham will appear this weekend both at the San Marco Bookstore and at the St. Augustine Amphitheater. Now, you have also wonderful memories, I understand it, of your time on the set with Gregory Peck, and you stayed close to him as well. Isn't that right, too?
I did. They really encouraged us to have a relationship on and off the set, which we did, and I would go over to their house sometimes on the weekends and play with their kids. He and Veronique had Anthony and Cecilia, who were at home, and we're still very close, and it was fun. It was such a beautiful family. I mean, what you see up on the screen is what we got at home. He was just such a great father and such a great human being, and was incredibly intelligent, loved to read, loved to keep up on all the latest things, and really encouraged us to read anything and everything, which I really thank him for, because that really saved me. And he would call just, you know, it was nothing for me to pick up the phone, and it would be him through the years. You know, what you doing, kiddo? How you doing? What are you reading? You know, just a delightful human being. And if he was close by, he would, you know, try and hook us up to where we could spend some time together. And whenever I was in Los Angeles, of course, I'd always go out to the house and visit with them.
Well, here's a scene between you and Gregory Peck in your roles as Atticus and Scout Finch. Let's take a quick listen.
Scout, what in the world has got into you? No.
Atticus, I'm not going back to school anymore.
Ah, Scout, it's just the first day.
I don't care. Everything went wrong. Teacher got mad as a devil at me and said you were teaching me to read all wrong and to stop it. Then acted like a fool and tried to give Walter Cunningham a quarter when everybody knows Cunninghams won't take nothing from nobody. Any fool could have told her that.
Well, maybe she's just nervous after all. It's her first day, too, teaching school and being new here.
Atticus.
Now, wait a minute. Just learn a single trick, Scout. You get along a lot better with all kinds of folks. You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view.
Sir?
Till you climb inside of his skin, walk around in it.
But if I keep going to school, we can't ever read anymore.
Scout? You know what a compromise is?
Been in the law?
No. It's an agreement reached by mutual consent. Now, here's the way it works. You concede the necessity of going to school. We'll keep right on reading the same every night, just as we always have. Is that a bargain?
When you listen to those scenes and just the incredible lessons that he was imparting to the child, what are your memories when you listen back to it again?
Well, we just had so much fun. It was such a loving set. I've never been present on a set like that ever, where everyone was so focused on the product and making everyone feel comfortable and giving us children, you know, the love and support that we needed to do this piece of work.
And we'll go to your calls for Mary Badham in just a moment. What are your questions for her? She played Scout in the 1962 classic To Kill a Mockingbird. The number to join the show is 549-2937. And I know you've been asked this a lot too, Mary. Last year, Harper Lee's second novel was published, Go Set a Watchman. And in that novel, we learn that Atticus Finch was not the angelic man fighting against Southern racism that he was portrayed to be in the first novel, that there was some complexities to his character. And what were your thoughts about the release of Go Set a Watchman?
Well, I have to admit, I was very, very nervous about the book. I was very concerned with what I had heard through the press, and I feel like a lot of press bent some of the facts of the book and didn't really read the whole book. This is a book that needs to be read from cover to cover, and the last three chapters are critical. If you don't read those last three chapters, you don't understand it. For people who are squeamish about reading the book, I would remind them that this was the first book. This was the basis from which Mockingbird jumped, because she wrote this. She wrote Watchmen, and then the editor sent her back and said, you know, this isn't it. Concentrate on the children. That's where the story is, which sent her back to the drawing board again to rewrite and come up with Mockingbird. But the basic fundamentals of the characters are still there. So just have faith, but do not put the book down before you finish it. Mm-hmm. You've got to read to the very last word.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you had become close to Harper Lee near the end of her life. The themes in her book of tolerance, compassion, trying to see things from the other's point of view, as we continue to have a very contentious debate in this country about these very concepts, and they're playing a central role in our politics right now.
Right.
If she were still with us, what do you think she would have to say about our 2016 election and some of the divides that we're seeing in this country right now?
Well, I think she would be extremely upset with some of our politicians who are just not being realistic and pulling this country apart. They're not seeing the big picture. We're a country made up of a lot of different kinds of people, and that's part of what makes us very strong. But we have to learn to come together as a country and not be pulled apart and not listen to racism and bigotry and it's sad for me because we've come so far, and yet we are still, there are some of us who are stuck in the dark ages. And I don't want to go back there. I don't know many people who do. But this is not just a black and white 1930s issue. This is global. This is bigotry and racism of any and all forms. And we have to fight against that continually. And the crux of the problem is education. If we fail to get a good education and to educate our population, then ignorance takes over. And for me, ignorance is the root of all evil. And education is the key to freedom. And, you know, when people fail to become educated, especially with the education we offer here in the United States and elsewhere, then you leave yourself wide open to be used and abused by more powerful people who will use their education to use other people badly. People who are greedy and who think about money and where they're going and not about the individual person and what's needed for the mass population to make us stronger and better and happier. It's really sad for me to see a lot of the kids nowadays who have given up, and they're only, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, and they're like, well, no, you know, I don't need this. They do need it. They absolutely need it. Otherwise, they'll be used by people who do not have their best interests at heart. But third world countries have known this for years, that you keep your population ignorant, then you can use them and abuse them at will because they have no tools to fight back. Well, the United States has fallen into that same trap. And we've kind of lost our moral compass. I don't care what religion of the major religions, they basically all speak of, and the bottom line, of taking care of one another and making each other better. And somewhere along the line, we've lost that. When I see, we don't have debates anymore. We have like screaming matches and one-upmanship, and the facts just seem to not matter, which is very sad to see. And I'm just hoping that the American public will do their homework for this next election and really pay attention to the ugliness that's happening in our political situation and try and go for the high road. Try and really look at this as to who's going to be the safest person, because we've never been in a more dangerous situation than we are right now. And some of these people, if they were to become in power,
Can you name a candidate that you're thinking of?
Well, I'm thinking mostly of Donald Trump. I mean, if you look at him, I don't want to get into a real political discussion, but he is so inflammatory and so divisive. He would not be good for this country. We would be really in danger, I fear, for the backing up of our allies. If he were to become president, I really am afraid that we would really get into a really bad situation.
All right, and I just want to jump in only because some folks have been waiting on hold for some time, just to connect with you. And let's go now to your calls for Mary Badham. She played the iconic role of Scout in the 1962 classic film To Kill a Mockingbird. 549-2937, Steve in Riverside. Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Thank you, Ms. Batty, for being a guest today. Can you share, as sort of a segue from what you were just speaking about, could you share a little bit about how your growing up in Mountain Brook influenced you positively or negatively regarding your, what I would classify as more progressive views today? I'm reading about you in Diane McWhorter's Carry Me Home, which is, I thought, a great presentation of the racial conflict in the South. And also my wife went to kindergarten with you, by the way.
Oh, wow. Funny. So, thanks for that. Yeah. Thank you, Steve.
A little bit about that Mountain Brook influence.
Okay. Mary.
Well, we did not live in Mountain Brook. We lived in the family home, which was on Southside. It was right above the steel mill. I went to sleep at night listening to them pouring steel and the train cars moving around down there. Dad sent me to school at to kindergarten and then on to his school, Miss May Ward's, which was a little one-room Victorian schoolhouse, first through fourth grade. And then I ended up going over to Brook Hill School for Girls. This was a real awakening because I'd never been around girls that much. I didn't know that much about females. And I was kind of a fish out of water because I'd been raised in a house full of boys.
Well, you're so tomboyish in the movie, too. Do you think that's part of why you got the part?
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
I really believe that that's part of it. But they were also looking for children with imaginations. And because my brothers were older, and I really was treated almost like an only child. And it became really difficult at home. But I felt set apart when I went to over to the girls' school as well because I didn't know how to fit in, and I felt like I didn't fit in because these girls were all from Mountain Brook, so they were from very wealthy families, and most of them, as if you look at Diane, I mean, they were so incredibly intelligent, and I had always been told that I wasn't.
But you obviously are.
I had, real problems making friends. But thanks to Diane and some of the other girls, we managed to find our way.
Yeah, and that book, Carry Me Home, about the civil rights movement in the South, in particular Alabama, really is just an incredible book. Thanks to Steve calling in about that. Tracy on the north side. Hi, Tracy. Good morning.
Hello. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, I was just curious. When you had that role and the accent that you had, because, of course, it took place in Alabama, did they have someone work with you, or was that a natural affectation? I'm just curious. Thank you.
Yeah, that was the way I spoke, but you quickly learn in the industry that if you want to get another job, you have to ditch the Southern accent. At least it was true then. It's not so much true now, but that was quite a hindrance to other jobs. Luckily, my mother was from Great Britain, and she was a speech coach, so it wasn't too difficult to lose that. But the times that I grew up in were rather difficult at home, and I ended up leaving Alabama because I just could not deal with it. So I moved away from Alabama when I was like 14 years old.
Oh, wow.
And I spent a lot of time in Los Angeles, some time in New York. And so I didn't stay in the South. So it was a little bit easier for me to lose the accent.
Well, here are some tweets from Mary Badham. Scout for president. Here's another one. This is the best guest of the year, Melissa. So cool. We usually have to wait for TCM for a good classic film interview. And here's one on our Facebook page from Virginia. At what age did Mary realize the impact of the film and her role? At what age did you realize that this film would really stand on its own, along with the book, of course, as an enduring American story?
I think sometime after I had my daughter, I think my daughter was around too. Professor Inge from the college called and asked if I would come and speak to his English Lit class. And I thought, well, I don't know what I'm going to talk to his English Lit class about, but okay. So I went, and he said, well, let's meet for lunch, and we'll discuss it. So even before I had gotten seated at the table, you know, he said, so what was your favorite part of the book? And I guess he could tell by the look on the face, I had not read the book yet.
Oh.
Young lady, your first assignment is to go home and read this book. And I did. It sort of steamrolled from there, because then the speaking engagement started to come, and people have based their whole lives literally around this book. Which I think is so fabulous, because it has such a strong moral compass to guide us. It has all the lessons in life that some of us still haven't learned. And that's what keeps me on the road, is promoting this book so that people will see what it is, that where we need to go with this. Because we still haven't learned all these lessons. We've come a long way with, you know, racial issues and women's lib and a lot of the social issues that we had to deal with back in the 30s. But when I was growing up in Alabama, black people still rode on the back of the bus. The signs were still up, you know, colored only, white only. You know, it... Coming from that background, that's why I say I don't want to go back. We've really got to think about this long and hard. What we want our country to look like.
Well, people will have the chance to hear you speak about this, not just one but two appearances this weekend, and I want to just jump in and let folks know that they can come out and meet you. There are two opportunities to meet Mary Badham. The first one is Saturday morning in San Marco. You'll be doing a talk and a book signing at the San Marco Bookstore and a presentation in Bayless Park. That is at 10 a.m. Saturday. And then you'll be hosting an evening with Scout. That is 6 o'clock Saturday night at the St. Augustine Amphitheater, a talk and a screening of the film. Now, these are both free events, Mary, so it's so exciting that people will have not just one, but two chances to come out and meet you, and one of them they'll be able to watch the film with you.
Well, I hope lots of people will come out. I'd love to meet everybody, and I'm so looking forward to both of these events and to have some good questions from the audience.
Absolutely. And once again, a pleasure to have you on the program. Really, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Mary. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Melissa. I appreciate it.
She's Mary Badham, the Oscar-nominated actress who portrayed Scout in the 1962 film To Kill a Mockingbird. You can meet Mary this weekend. Two chances. There is one appearance beginning at San Marcos Bayless Park at 10 a.m. Saturday morning, along with a book signing at the San Marco Bookstore. That's Saturday at 10 a.m. And then also Saturday evening at 6 p.m. It's To Kill a Mockingbird, an evening with Scout, 6 p.m. Saturday evening at the St. Augustine Amphitheater. Both events are free, so mark your calendar right now. Much more still ahead later. The Spectator with a look at some other weekend events. Music legend Herb Alpert joins us. But up next, the CEO of the Jacksonville Symphony on their new season. Back in a moment.
Farmers raise the animals and grow the crops and feed the rest of us, but it is harder than it used to be. until the marketplace wants to incentivize me or send a clear signal, I'm going to sit on my hands, continue to raise the pigs as my father and grandfather did.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, American Farmers and the Food Conversation in This Country. That is next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Even in tough economic times, there are many local stories of success. I'm Karen Mathis with the Daily Record. On First Coast Success, I speak with Northeast Florida business executives and entrepreneurs about their experiences and accomplishments. Hear the interviews the last Monday of each month on First Coast Connect or on demand at WJCTnews.org. Brought to you in part by Iberia Bank.
Rocket engineer Bob Ebling tried and failed to stop the launch of the Space Shuttle Challenger.
And I think that was one of the mistakes that God made. He shouldn't have picked me for that job.
Those words prompted hundreds of listeners to write to Ebling about three decades of guilt, his response, and NASA's perspective. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT.
Now, this wasn't the first time that I was in completely over my head. I've counseled married couples on their sex life, and I've never had sex myself. I hear it's great.
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour. True stories told live from the public radio exchange, PRX.org.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, this Saturday, the Jacksonville Symphony kicks off its 2016-17 season with the Symphony Fanfare Gala. Joshua Bell, often called the poet of the violin, will take the center stage, led by conductor Courtney Lewis. You can be a part of the celebration as this American treasure brings his virtuosity to Tchaikovsky's timeless violin concerto. Robert Massey is president and CEO of the Jacksonville Symphony. He's here now with more about Saturday night and the upcoming season. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. So two big stars on stage. You'll have Courtney Lewis and Joshua Bell. Lots of star power.
We have excellent stars. We have Courtney Lewis, we have Joshua Bell, and we have the 68 musicians of the Jacksonville Symphony who are just phenomenal.
And and it's an evening of Tchaikovsky, sort of a Russian theme, isn't it?
It is. There's Tchaikovsky. There is some Sibelius and some music by Esa-Pekka Salonen, a contemporary composer. So we kind of go north for the evening.
Now, this is a kickoff to the whole new slate of concerts, and you've got a really ambitious program laid out. What can we be looking forward to?
Well, 16-17 marks Courtney Lewis's second season as music director. And what you've seen over the last 6 months is a lot of new programs, new repertoire, new educational initiatives. You've seen new faces on stage, backstage, new faces in the audience. So if the theme for this year is new, the theme for next year is enhanced, because we're giving you more of what you love in the Jacksonville Symphony. There's more music, there's more access, there's more choice. Mm-hmm. And we're one of the very few orchestras in the country where we're actually growing. We're providing more music. So we're so excited about what we're able to bring to the community. Our Best Bet Symphony in 60 series of 60-minute happy hour concerts will grow from three concerts to four concerts. Our Sunday matinees, which has been an incredible way to provide more access to audiences of all ages, they'll grow from six concerts to eight concerts. Fidelity National Financial Pop Series goes from eight productions to 12 productions. And of course, our Florida Blue Masterwork season, the cornerstone of our main stage programming, will grow from 10 programs to 12 programs, allowing just new repertoire to come in, more guest artists, and of course, the classics that everybody loves.
Now, Courtney Lewis will be conducting 8 out of the 12 Masterworks concerts. You've also got a new website redesign that you've rolled out. So lots of new, exciting changes.
Absolutely. And the website is brand new this week, www.jacksymphony.org. It goes with our new look, our new logo, and really represents this new era for the Jacksonville Symphony.
And you're a new face as well. You just told me you've been in the position about a year, coming from Iowa. At this time of year, I would think Florida's a nice change from Cedar Rapids, right?
It's been a wonderful winter here.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Well, it's good to have you in town. It's good to have the symphony doing so well. And of course, we always like to point out that our own First Coast Connect theme song was composed by one of your musicians, Piotr Chevchik. It's an original composition that people hear every morning, and I can't tell you how often people ask us about it. So just wanted to let you know that.
He's a great talent, and what an incredible resource to have in the orchestra.
Yes, absolutely. So again, go to jackssymphony.org. Check out the new Symphony's 2016-17 season with new events, more shows, the Florida Blue Masterworks Series, and of course, this Saturday night, it's the big kickoff with the Jacksonville Symphony Fanfare Gala. Joshua Bell, the poet of the violin, taking center stage, led by conductor and music director Courtney Lewis. It's Tchaikovsky's Timeless Violin Concerto. Tickets at jackssymphony.org. Robert Massey, president and CEO, thanks so much for being with us. Have a great time.
Thanks for being here. See you in the hall.
All right. More music to talk about as Grammy Award-winning trumpeter Herb Alpert performs at the Florida Theater next week. I spoke with Alpert about his new album and his incredible career in music. Take a listen. Herb Alpert, a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
So the Come Fly With Me concert tour coming to the Florida Theater, and this is being hailed as really exciting new work from you. Can you tell us a little bit about the show? I believe your wife is also performing with you on stage. Is that right?
Oh, we've been doing this for the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. With the same group, just a little trio behind us, drums, bass, and keyboards, having a great time doing it. We play a little Tijuana Brass medley. Lonnie will do a little medley from her past years with Sergio in Brazil 66. She was the lead singer, the original singer with Sergio. You know, she recorded, you know, Fool on the Hill and Mashkinata and all those great songs. We're playing songs that we like to play. You know, there's an American Songbook, and I think there's been a lack of melodies lately, and I think a lot of artists, you know, are going back into the oldies, into the songs written in the 30s and 40s, and we're doing a lot of those, plus a lot of contemporary songs as well. So it's a big mix of really interesting music that we like to perform.
Yeah, and Come Fly With Me, I mean, that's your take on the Sinatra classic, isn't it?
Well, actually, Come Fly With Me, that was the only version I ever heard, was Sinatra. And I know in the lyric, he took everyone to Indonesia someplace. And I thought, hey, I'm going to put on steel drums, and let's go to the Caribbean. So that was my take on that. And when I find a song that I know people are familiar with, I try to do it, you know, in a way that hasn't been done quite that way before.
Now, in addition to your incredible career in music, you've also been a strong philanthropist, and you've funded music education programs all over the country. That's a passion of yours as well, right?
Well, it certainly is, because I had this incredible opportunity when I was 8 years old in my grammar school here in Los Angeles. There was a music appreciation class. And in that class, there was a table filled with various instruments. There were clarinets and trombones, drums, trumpet. I picked up the trumpet. Couldn't make a sound out of it, but I liked the feeling of it. There was something tactile about it that I liked. So I finally learned how to play it, and I was super shy as a kid. And this trumpet was speaking for me. It was my personality. So I don't know. I just feel like the creative arts is such an important ingredient for kids at an early age. I think it should be a core subject in all grammar schools, and private or public. Kids get a chance to rub elbows with their own creativity, and I think through that they get to experience their own uniqueness. And then if they can do that, then maybe they can appreciate the uniqueness in others. So for me, it's a win-win. I've been very, very fortunate in my life, and I just wanted to pass it on.
Well, it's a pleasure to speak with you, and lots of excitement about your March 4th show at the Florida Theater. Herb Alpert, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thanks so much. No one will be disappointed. It's a great show.
Herb Alpert and Lonnie Hall and their band perform Friday, March 4th at 8 p.m. at the Florida Theater. Tickets at floridatheater.com. Well, a unique event is coming up celebrating the 55th anniversary of the Peace Corps. Now, this is an international film festival. Yeah. First Coast Returned Peace Corps Volunteers has launched the Third Goal International Film Festival. Honoring the third goal in John F. Kennedy's mission statement for the Peace Corps, to help promote a better understanding of other peoples on the part of Americans. This festival features an award-winning film based on the inspirational true story of a young Ethiopian girl and a tenacious lawyer embroiled in a life-or-death clash between tradition and equal rights. Organizer Bernadette Miron and board member Phil Stanchel are here now with a preview. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So, Bernadette, first of all, I had no idea the Peace Corps had hit its 55th anniversary. Right off the bat, that's quite a milestone.
Well, it is, and we are celebrating all week. March 1st was when Peace in 1961 was when Peace Corps was officially established. So, yeah, we're celebrating all week.
Wow. And this is one way to do it. Phil, how did you hit upon the idea of a film festival to mark this occasion?
Actually, that was Bernadette's idea.
Oh, it was Bernadette's idea.
She was the one that came up with the idea.
Okay. So let's talk about what's happening.
Probably best to let Bernadette.
Oh, well, we hit upon the idea because that is what a lot of different groups are doing to further the third goal of presenting other cultures to Americans, and so I'm just copying their idea.
So this is being done in other cities?
Oh, yeah. A lot of different Return Peace Corps volunteer groups do this kind of thing. So we are at Players by the Sea on March 5th. The film we're featuring is Defret that you talked about, the Ethiopian film, but we're also going to have short documentary clips of the Peace Corps and different happenings in the Peace Corps, and we're having a volunteer from Guatemala come and talk about her experience. So we're doing Peace Corps and Ethiopia.
Very nice. Now, this is coming up Saturday, March 5th, 1 to 5 p.m. at Players by the Sea.
That's right.
And as you said, Phila, this promotes the third goal of the mission statement of the Peace Corps. And how did you get involved in this?
Well, I was a Peace Corps volunteer in the early 70s in Sierra Leone. And then I returned in the 90s as a Peace Corps staff member, and I was the country director in Slovakia.
How do you think when people come out and see these films and these clips that it will help kind of bring home the experience to them and the continued work of the Peace Corps overseas?
Well, hopefully when people are exposed to different ways people live in different countries, it satisfies our third goal, which is to introduce people to other cultures, other peoples.
Yeah. And this is an easy way to be part of it. People need to just come on out and
oh, they should come out if anyone's interested. We still have seats available, not too many, but if you're interested in the Peace Corps, if you want to be a Peace Corps volunteer, if you've entertained this thought, come on out. And there's no age limit to being a volunteer. So
people think it's only for young people, but it's not.
It's not. We have volunteers in their 80s, not many,
wow.
But we've had a couple volunteers in their 80s. So if your children are grown and you want to entertain the idea, now's the time to do it.
Well, the oldest volunteer in the world right now is 83 years old.
That's fantastic.
Serving in Moldova.
Get out of here. Well, it's the Third Goal International Film Festival honoring the 55th anniversary of the Peace Corps. It's next Saturday, March 5th. 1 to 5 p.m. at Players by the Sea. That's out at the beach. Just go to playersbythesea.org. Come on out and check out the lineup of films. Bernadette Miron, board member Phil Stanchel, thanks for letting us know all about it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Again, that's next weekend. But finally, this hour, lots to do across the First Coast this weekend. from Vince Gill and Lyle Lovett to the Harlem Globetrotters. Lots of stars in town here to tell us all about it. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, another round podcaster, Carrie Spikeman, here today. All right, let me just say that the venerable Charlie Patton of the Florida Times Union saw fit to profile you.
I know.
And your podcast, Another Round.
I know. He sat
Spikeman.
There. He actually sat there and listened to it.
And I just, you've arrived.
Clearly.
You now have the Charlie Patton seal of approval.
Stamp it.
It's in. It's done.
Yes.
Everybody needs to download the Spectator podcast.
Another round. The Spectator and Chill Will.
Very, very exciting.
I was just listening to the new one on my way here, Julie Watkins.
Oh, is she your new guest? Very
yes,
nice.
Yes.
And people can come out on Tuesday nights to European Street in Riverside.
Correct.
And see you guys doing the podcast.
And you have the most listens, by the way.
Do I really?
You do. More than Courtney Lewis.
Get out of here.
No, you do. Totally.
I beat Courtney Lewis?
Yes.
Now that's saying something.
You've got more than 300, girl.
I'll take that.
Take it.
I'll take that running. Now, let's go to Weekend Events Thursday night, which is tonight.
Yes.
It's Three Squares at the Prime Osborne Convention Center. This is a great event benefiting the local food bank.
Correct.
And one ticket gets you in to enjoy all the best
all
restaurants
kinds
in town.
Of food and cocktails and Firewater Tent Revival. They will be performing. It's at the Prime Osborne. And this is a not good statistic. 1 in 6 adults, I guess, and 1 in 4 children in the area struggle with hunger. So
right.
Come
so,
out and support
yeah,
that.
And you can walk up and buy your ticket at the Prime Osborne tonight. Food and drinks from the best places in town. And this supports the Feeding Northeast Florida Food Bank. It's Three Squares. That's tonight.
It is.
Also tonight at the Veterans Memorial Arena, comedian and ventriloquist Jeff Dunham.
Jeff Dunham, yes. The wildly popular and internationally acclaimed comic ventriloquist.
Uh-huh.
Jeff Dunham, is that the one you're referring to?
Yes.
He apparently, according to New York Times, has been declared the most successful comedian working in America.
Really? He's that
big? I know.
Big?
I was...
Jeez.
I'm kind of scared of puppets. Well, are they puppets? The ventriloquist dummies.
Does that's he probably, use a dummy?
They're probably not. That's probably not politically correct to say dummy.
But so he does? That's part
that's
of the
his,
act.
That's
okay.
his thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he's tonight at Veterans Arena. Now, also tonight, lots of good stuff tonight.
I know.
Tonight at Florida Theater, it's an evening with Vince Gill and Lyle Lovett. Pretty
yes.
cool.
They will be singing. Oh. Here we go.
Here we go. A little of the two of them together. I love Lyle Lovett. So
I saw him in the what's the place? Thrasher Horn Center.
Uh-huh.
And I went with a friend of mine. I didn't know him, like never heard him. He was really, really, really good.
Oh, yeah. Terrific.
Yes, he was terrific. But they'll be singing, telling stories. And
yeah, that'll be a special evening. That's tonight. Tickets at floridatheater.com tonight.
Yes.
Vince Gill and Lyle Lovett. I do believe you could probably still get a ticket to that. And then tomorrow night, they're back in town again. The Harlem Globetrotters. They come here all the time.
It's so hard for me not to whistle the Sweet George Brown song.
I think we have it.
But my mouth is very dry.
Oh, well, you've been doing all those podcasts.
And I'm not the greatest whistler in the world.
I'm not going to try.
They are celebrating their 90th anniversary. Can you believe that?
How long?
90.
Get out.
90.
Get right out of town.
No, 90. They're doing a world tour.
They've been around since the 20s.
If that's what
that
the math works
be
out
accurate.
To be. Yeah.
Really?
I believe Wilt Chamberlain was...
No, that was more about like his private life. No, I shouldn't have said that. No, they have been around since the 20s. That can't be right.
You know what? Take it up with their website.
Okay, I will. I'm going to ascertain the facts on that.
Maybe
one.
There's some math that someone messed up.
Okay, but they're performing tonight at the Veterans Memorial
Arena.
Tomorrow night. Also tomorrow night, it's the Experience Hendrix Tour. Ooh, Buddy Guy's part of this. It's like a tribute
Kenny
to Jimmy.
Wayne Shepherd.
Kenny Wayne Shepherd.
Dweezil Zappa, Keb Moe.
Yeah.
Lots of big names.
Where's that going to be?
That is going to be at the Florida Theater.
Okay.
Here's
a
little fun fact. Jimi Hendrix, he died in 1970. That's not fun. But he is an official Twitter account with more than 470,000 followers.
Who's running that?
The ghost of Jimi Hendrix? I don't know.
Maybe Sean Birch's hair runs that in his spare time. the Twitter account at Sean Birch's
His hair's been very quiet lately.
It's been quiet lately because maybe he's too busy running this one.
Still very lush.
Yeah.
And shiny.
Yeah. It's still something to behold.
And have a Twitter account for
it. Now, also this weekend, this is exciting, and I will be attending the 2016 Greek Festival. Jacksonville Greek Festival at the Morocco Shrine Temple.
That is correct. It is Friday through Sunday. They will have Greek food. I think it's $3 to get in.
Yeah, nothing. Great ticket.
And under 12, I think it's free, and military, I think it's free too. But they'll have everything from souvenirs from Greece, handmade crafts, obviously food. They'll have folk dancing.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good old time.
Get your Greek on. Opa at the Greek Festival. Almost out of time, but also Saturday night, it's Richard Marx coming to town. Yes. The Pontevedra Concert Hall.
Yes. Good old Richard Marx with his quadruple platinum single. I'm surprised Sean did not whip up a song. I was waiting for Right Here Waiting.
Yeah, so no Richard Marx. Maybe we have a little cut of Alabama, though. They're Sunday at the St. Augustine Amphitheater.
Yes, they are. And how many years are they celebrating?
40 years. Alabama's been out touring now for 40 years.
And boy, are their feet tired. Or their fingers. Or
43 number one singles. How about that?
That's a lot.
73 million albums sold.
Let me just give a real quick plug to the Riverside Craft Beer Festival, which is Saturday, 3 to 7. And it features all kinds of craft beers from Jacksonville and
beyond. Is that
at
the Arts Market?
It is the location of the Arts Market.
Oh, okay. Under the bridge.
Correct. 715 Riverside Avenue. But it is to benefit the Riverside Rotary Club and specifically Community Peds Care
and
Hospice.
Go to thespectator.com for a full list of events and also to download another round with The Spectator and Chill Will.
Yes.
All right, I'll see you next week.
Bye. Love the dress.
And that's our show. Diane Reams up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. Video segments at tvjax.com. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.